Welcome back to Considering Leadership, that process of leadership. Now, just a reminder, we're in this process talking about a leader who interacts with the culture or the way things are done in a particular place, a situation that exists in a particular place at a particular time, and works with that people in that culture to develop a vision of a preferred future, and then provide the impetus for planning and prayer that will make that future a reality. That's what we're looking at. And we're looking particularly at the leader in these sessions here as we transition from the previous class into this one. Today, what I want to talk about is the fact that if you are a leader, you are likely going to have to grow as a leader. You're going to have to grow in your capacity. Even people who are strong natural leaders, I talked about that in that first session in the intro class, in a previous session here in CLI. The fact that there are some people who are strong natural leaders, they just naturally have people looking to them for leadership there and just naturally seem to be able to make decisions well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for most of us, we're going to have to grow in our capacity to lead as we encounter new situations. It's one thing to be called into a situation where you are, but if you're a leader, that situation will change and your leadership capacity is going to have to grow. And so I'm going to, in this session and the next one, just talk about some ways you can grow, some things you can focus on that will make your impact as a leader greater, make your capacity as a leader grow. And one of those is simply learning to prioritize. Now, if you're like any pastor I know, you've got a to-do list that is incredibly long and complex. I've had the privilege of working with a great partner of ministry the last 11 years of my time in active pastoral ministry. And he was a good leader, but he was a managing leader. I don't want to say but there. He was a managing leader. Sometimes people are stronger on the visionary and some are stronger on the management side of a leadership spectrum. Well, he was really good on the management side, which meant he liked to keep things in order. And I depended on him a great deal for that purpose. One day he came in and he said, I'm so frustrated. He said, I start my day, and he did, as is recommended by some leadership gurus, started his day by looking at his list of to-dos. And he said, but by the end of the day, you know, after I check off a few of them, I've got added so many that I've got more things to do at the end of the day than I did at the beginning of the day. That's probably your experience if you're a leader in some way, shape, or form. And so one thing that's going to help you is learning how to prioritize those things on your to-do list. Now, for many leaders, this doesn't come naturally. There are some people who are given spiritual gifts in leadership and administration. My experience has been that very few leaders, one estimate is like 17% of leaders, have the mixture of those two gifts. Most leaders, then, are strongly gifted in leadership. In other words, they're able, people who are able to help define a vision and help people more move toward the vision, but they tend not to be the best organized people in the world. But I'll tell you today that it is going to help you immensely if you learn not just to get your life organized, but learn how to prioritize among the many things that show up on your to-do list. There are just a couple of questions that will help you do this. Asking what's most important today? And what will give me the greatest return on the time I spend on this particular issue? Now, those are great questions. What's most important? Now, other people might have an idea about what's most important for you to be doing, but what's most important for you to fulfill the calling that God has given you? In those first 10 sessions in the introductory course, we talked about, you know, creating a mission statement. For your mission in life, what's the most important investment of your time as reflected in your to-do list? And what's going to give you the greatest return for the time that you spend on it? One of the people who has put this very well is a man named Stephen Covey. He wrote a book years ago now, which continues to be reprinted because it's been so influential. And it's simply this, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He did a research project on people that were deemed to be very effective in leadership. They were people that were looked to for wisdom. They were people who were looked to for guidance. They were people who had led organizations of a variety of kinds in effective ways, in fulfilling visions and expanding dreams and creating companies, etc. And he was able to boil it down to, here's the seven habits that these people have. And one of the habits had to do with how they dealt with their time, how they prioritize the stuff on their to-do list. In fact, here's the quadrants that he created and gave to us, and I want to give them to you today. You'll notice our quadrants. These are things you can spend your time on. You'll notice quadrant one are things that are both urgent, that's the top line, and they're important. And so if you've got something that is urgent and important, it's a quadrant one thing. And as you're making your to-do list and there's something that you say, whoop, I got to get to this now, that goes there. Quadrant two are those things that are important. You'll notice they're on that level, but they are not urgent. And we're going to talk in a moment about how you interpret what those are. Quadrant three are those things that are not important, but they're urgent. In other words, they're things that you feel like, I've got to do these, but they're not really important in helping you fulfill your mission. They're not helpful in helping you move your organization forward or into a vision. They're urgent. They feel urgent, but they're not important. And quadrant four are those things that are not urgent and not important. Well, here's a little deeper explanation. You'll notice that the urgent things, these are time-sensitive things. They must be done and done now. They are necessary if you're going to do them. If you're in a church and you get a telephone call that somebody on your staff has been in an accident or that somebody died, all of a sudden that becomes urgent and important. It may not have been on your list, but it's on there now and it's something you can't put off. There are certain meetings that become urgent and important. Unfortunately, we can sometimes be driven by the tyranny of the urgent, but you've got a major meeting, a vision meeting for your elders or for people who are in leadership in your company, and you've got to be ready for it. It's in 2 hours. You can't put that off. It's urgent. It's important. It's necessary that you do that right now. Quadrant two is where Covey says we should be spending more time than we do. In fact, it's a quadrant of time that we usually ignore, much to our sadness and failure. Those things are planning, doing planning for the future. Now, oftentimes we are so struck by the tyranny of the urgent that we don't spend time sitting down and planning. We don't spend time in reflection. I was part of a meeting last week. I'm part of a group that's beginning a new program in our area where we connect a retired pastor who's got a lot of experience in ministry and connect that pastor with a solo pastor in a church that is stuck. In other words, they've been doing the same thing, and the solo pastor's there has to, you know, to just scramble to just keep things going. And so we're trying to partner those. But I was with the people who have done it, and they were kind of the alpha test. We're moving on to the beta testing of this now. But the pastor in the church, the retired pastor, we're both at this small meeting of people, and the pastor said, you know, when Bill came on, the retired guy, said, that's the first time I've had time to go away and pray. I've had time to go away and plan. I've had time to go away and think about where I want this church to go. That's a quadrant two activity. Training is a quadrant two activity, that you identify some people who are going to help you fulfill your vision, the vision of the company, the vision of the church, the vision of the organization, and they need training, and that's a quadrant two activity. Or relationships, fascinating, those are quadrant two. They are extremely important, but they're not urgent. In the United States, it's a sad thing, and I know from working in Haiti and in Honduras that it's pretty common in those cultures as well. Pastors can get so busy with the things of the kingdom that they begin to ignore their families. And so quadrant two is an important quadrant. Quadrant three, I've labeled it distraction. These are things that feel urgent. They are things like, you know, updating the social media for the company. Yeah, it feels like you should do this, but, you know, it's not going to make a great big difference in whether you fulfill your vision or not. A lot of people things come into this quadrant. We're going to talk about more of that in the next session. But that can feel so important that it becomes urgent, but the reality is it may be urgent to somebody else, but it is a distraction from what you should be doing. Some people can get really caught up in quadrant three in that they love to study, and they sit in their study, and they study all sorts of things, and it keeps them from moving on with the vision. And then quadrant four I've labeled waste. These are most male that you get. You know, I really believe that the kingdom of God, at least in the United States, should quit mailing. If we stopped all mailings in the kingdom, every Christian organization in the United States stopped a mail for a week, about 2 weeks, we'd be able to fund missions to the entire world. And you can spend a whole bunch of time opening envelopes and reading mail that really has nothing to do with what God has called you to do. It can be a waste. Most television is a waste. Facebook can be a waste. You know, I have friends on Facebook. One woman said, you know, sit down, I'm just going to look through what people have said, and next thing I know, it's an hour later. All kinds of other things. Now, the interesting thing about this is that people who have experienced this in their lives will say that when they get really busy, they start getting burned out, and as a result, it feels so good to just spend some quadrant four time, you know, to just do the little stuff, to the stuff that doesn't require something of you. So there are the quadrants. When you are looking at your time expenditure, where do you put it? Now, it's very easy to develop a tool that will help you. All you got to do is make four boxes and say, okay, here's my to-do list. Which of them are quadrant one issues? Which of them are quadrant two issues? Which of them are quadrant three issues? Which of them are quadrant four issues? And write them appropriately. And then put down number one, what's your priority? There's an old story about a consultant of a company. In fact, there was a well-known company here in the United States. A guy called in a consultant to help him. He says, you know, I just seem to be scrambling. What can you do for me? He says, well, he says, here it is. He said, what's your priority today? What do you need to get done in order to move this company forward? And the man said, well, this is what I am. He said, what's the next one? Gave him three priorities. He said, now here's my advice to you. Write down that first priority, he said, and work to that. Work on that until you're done with it. Don't let anything else distract you. And then when you're done with that, you move on to priority two. And then you work on that until you're done with it. You've completed it. And don't let anything else distract you. And then go to number three and work on that. And don't let anything distract you until you're done with that. And he said, and then he says, you just proceed accordingly. He said, well, the guy said, okay, I'll try that. Didn't sound all that revolutionary to him, but the guy said, I'll try it. And what do I owe you? What are you going to charge me for this advice? And the consultant said, well, give it a week, and you can write me a check for whatever you think is appropriate. Well, the next week, the consultant got a check for $25,000 because it was revolutionary and how effective that leader could be. And so how do you use your time? In that intro class, I shared this Pareto principle, Pareto being a mathematician from a previous time, but he noticed that split between 80 and 20, and how 80% of your time expended will only give you 20% of your results, because you can spend 80% of your time on many trivial tasks, but if you spend 20% on a few vital tasks, that's going to give you 80% of your results. And so defining what are the vital tasks, and spending as much time needed as possible on those. So that's the first bit of advice. Related to it and how you spend your time is how you relate to people. What kind of people do you relate to? The person that has been very helpful to me in this is a man named Gordon MacDonald. I wrote a book called Restoring Your Spiritual Passion. And I read that when a time when my spiritual passion was at a low. And in one part of that book, he defines and gives labels to the various kind of people you will interact with if you are in leadership. And some of them are very good and helpful, and some are not. First of all, he said there's the VRP, the very resourceful people. These are people that when we interact with them, we find our passion growing. These people are mentors in our lives. They shape our lives. They are desperately needed in our lives. These are people that are very important to me, and I've been intentional since I began to realize this in making sure that I have interaction with very resourceful people. My long-term mentor, we've been friends, but he's been my mentor. He's been my VRP for decades now. We still connect with each other, though we live in different parts of the country. Every month we spend an hour and a half. We schedule it in for a telephone conversation because he's my VRP. I need his input. I need his resourcing. When I have a problem, he's got ideas. He knows what's been done. I needed more of that. And so when I lived in Southern California, I created a group of 10 people, leaders that I respected. And we would get together just to talk about things that we had in common. How are you dealing with staff in your church? How are you selling or how are you promoting the vision of your church? How are you dealing with problems that come up? What problems are coming up? We did that when I moved to Michigan. That was so rich for me that I sought out various people that I heard about in West Michigan where I live, and I got them together and said, okay, well, how about if we get together regularly? And so every 6 weeks, we gather just to talk about those things we have in common that will resource us, that will provide us ideas, that will provide us passion, because we'll see other people, and as the Proverbs say, iron sharpens iron. You know? That's the VRP. One of the people in history that had VRPs was William Wilberforce. William Wilberforce is credited with ending slavery. He was the politician in England who ended slavery being practiced by the country of England. And it took years and years and years. It took all kinds of interaction in Parliament. And when it was finally done, in fact, he died when it was finally completed and the legislation was passed. But as people look back at that, they realize that he was resourced by a group called the Clapham Sect, a group of people who were behind him and resourcing him with ideas and studies and experiences. And if you're a leader, who are those VRPs in your life? Where are they? Hopefully some of them are here at Christian Leaders Institute. That's our hope here, of course, that you'll find here people who are resourcing you. But what about others you connect with on a regular basis? You need VRPs in your life. There's also the VIPs. These are the very important people. They are the people who share our passion, and they are the people who encourage and enrich us, often within the organization that we are part of. I still interact with one of the VIPs from the church I served in Southern California. We went through a time of some changes in vision and resources, and I didn't understand a great deal about leadership back then, but I kind of rode hard, and I had the changes made with some reluctance on the part of the elders of that church. But boy, I wanted them to get into a church planting ministry. And so I kind of rammed it through that we were going to call this a person who graduated from seminary, who was a native of California, and so he'd understand the culture, and we were going to launch him from our church into a new daughter church, and was able to handle that through. And I remember one man after that experience just calling me and saying, I'd like to have lunch with you sometime. And he was just open with me, honest with me. He said, you did it. You did it. You got this piece done. He said, but you'd be far more effective if you leaned on some of us who are leaders here too. And he began to name some of the people in the church. He said, they will help you. You don't have to carry the ball the whole way. They'll help you. And that was just so instructive as a young leader in a growing church. It was so instructive and helpful to me to find who are those people who are important, who are going to share in my living out a dream, defining vision, and living out that vision. So then there are the VIPs. The next category, he says, are the VTPs, the very trainable people. These are the people who catch our passion, who are people who want to learn how to lead better, people that are going to take significant parts of ministry in the future, and people like Elijah and Elisha. as Elijah trains Elisha to be the prophet to take over for him and then passes on the responsibility. Mordecai and Esther, I just read through Esther in my devotions in the mornings and was astounded again about God's movement in that time. But the reality is, you know, Esther wouldn't have done what she did if Mordecai, her uncle, hadn't been there encouraging her along the way, hadn't been giving her resources to work with, hadn't been telling her what the situation was and how she was called by God, he felt, to make a difference there. Joash and Jehoiada, one of my favorite stories from the book of Kings, 2 Kings. You can read it for yourself, where Joash becomes king at a very, very young age. And yet he does incredibly well as king. In fact, he renews the spiritual vitality of the country. But he's got a VTP. He is the VTP, the trainable person for Jehoiada the high priest. Jehoiada takes Joash under his wing, and he becomes a greater king than he ever would have if he hadn't had this person training him. So Joash, came with the trainable heart. So who are the VTPs in your life, in your organization, those people who can take on the ministry and take a responsibility for part of it? Then there are the VNPs, the very nice people. You'll notice the notes I put under that. They are nice to us. They take time, but they don't further the vision. These are people who maybe are on the fringe of the organization. In the church, you find all kinds of very nice people. And they'll be nice to you if you're working within a church setting. They'll be really nice to you. They'll maybe take you out to dinner or have you over to their home. They'll talk with you. They're just nice people. But they're people who aren't engaging in fulfilling the vision. And so they will take a lot of time if you let them take a lot of time. Now, you've got to watch this because they can become very trainable people. That's true of the disciples of Jesus, right? They maybe were nice people. Maybe they were following Jesus around for a while. They heard him speak in a variety of settings. And they said, we want to follow this guy. They became very trainable people as they were called into ministry. Now, there's probably some of those like you or just in your organization who could grab on to a part of the vision if they were invited to do so. With staff in the churches I've served, one of the practices we did is we talked about, okay, who's involved in ministry? In other words, we try to list every person in the church, and that ran up to many, many pages. But where are they involved? Are they involved in children's ministry, youth ministry, adult ministry? Are they involved in outreach? Are they involved in the community in a significant way in ministry? Where is everybody involved in this church? And then we'd say, okay, how do people get in these positions of involvement? And we found over and over and over again that most of them get into positions where they become the very trainable people. They move from very nice to very trainable by invitation of the leader. And so, I would send staff people out with that challenge. Go invite somebody to become trained. And in fact, in one church staff meeting, I actually assigned people to a course that they would work through with people. And all of them had two people, at least, that they had to train as people who would become important in fulfilling the vision of that particular church and organization. These people are around you. They're very nice, and they can become so much more if they would just be trained. And so invite them to be trained. So that's the very VNPs, the very nice people. And then finally, there's the VDPs, the very draining people. These people are demanding. They take energy from us. They are needy. Now, a mistake that pastors often make, and I'll speak as one who's made this mistake, is that we believe we've got to respond equally to everyone in the church, and particularly to those who are needy. And it took me a long time to realize that God had not called me to take care of everyone. And I remember the day I got a call from a person, and it was somebody I got a call from at least once a week, and they had a family crisis every single week. And this was the latest family crisis. And I remember on the phone talking with him, I saying, okay, now is everybody safe? Yeah, everybody's safe. What's going to change if I get to you today or tomorrow? Well, you know, we want you here today. Well, okay, but is there anything going to change? And realize that she was trying to make her crisis my crisis. Later we're going to talk about that move from shepherd to rancher. But it's very important to realize that very demanding people will demand a lot from you. They will not ease up. Your job as a leader is to make sure they are taken care of. But they don't have to be taken care of by you. And so you've got to look at these kinds of people that you're going to interact with. And that is going to impact your leadership powerfully if you learn how to interact with these people in ways that make you more effective as a person. And that will make you more passionate about the ministry God has called you to. So as you think about being a leader, who are those people and how do you spend your time? Who are those people who are going to help you in achieving the vision, and how do you spend your time with your to-do list? Get those two things straight, and you will become a more effective leader with greater capacity for being used by God powerfully.